The problem with mail-order DNA tests.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Federal regulators have ordered the genetic testing company 23andMe to stop marketing its mail-order DNA sampling kits. The FDA is worried about faulty test results. Marketplace's Adrian Hill is following this morning. Adrian?
Good morning, David.
So quickly, 23andMe, what do they do?
Well, for $99, you mail them some saliva, they test it, and they let you know more about your ancestry, sort of where in the world your relatives are from.
Like whether or not my people are really from Madagascar?
Exactly. At least what percent of your DNA comes from that part of the world. And this is where they get into hot water with the FDA. They claim to offer you information on your health and the future of your well-being.
What kinds of things are we talking about?
Well, they promise on their website their health reports will include analysis of 240 health conditions, everything from asthma to bipolar disorder. They also look at diseases you might be a carrier of and how your body might respond to specific drugs.
But what part of this is really bugging the FDA?
Well, the FDA is worried about false results. You don't want patients acting on results by getting treatment they don't need if those results are false positives. And you don't want them to put off going to the doctor if they get false negatives. The FDA basically wants to make sure these kits do what they say they're going to do. And the FDA says they don't have assurance from 23andMe the test works the way the company says it does.
All right. So what happens next?
Well, the company has 15 business days to respond to the FDA. If they don't respond in a way the FDA is happy with, the FDA can take additional action. So we're going to know a lot more soon.
One last thing. The company's name, 23andMe, does that have something to do with 23 pairs of chromosomes in the human?
You're a genius, my friend. That's it.
Lucky guess. Marketplace's Adrian Hill. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
TV's Katie Couric is taking a job as an anchor of an internet news show at Yahoo. Couric will keep hosting her daytime talk show on regular TV, for now anyway, although ABC has not decided if it will renew the show after next season. Marketplace's David Weinberg looks at what else Couric may have considered.
Susan Wise Miller is a career counselor in Los Angeles, and she says if Katie Couric had come to her asking for advice on whether to take the job at Yahoo, one of the first things she would have done
is to ask her, what are all the reasons, what are all the pluses of the new job?
Yahoo is writing some big checks.
Mark Tadge teaches media studies at DePauw. He says another plus of going to Yahoo is the excitement of shaping the future of new media.
Yahoo's got to make some really bold changes, otherwise it's not going to be around.
Of course, that's where we get to the other part of the decision-making process, the minuses, or the downside of not taking the new job.
I think Ms. Couric has to also be thinking about what's the future of broadcast news and where broadcasting is going.
Couric clearly believes it's going in the direction of digital, but it was not exactly an all-or-nothing decision for her. Yahoo and ABC have a content-sharing agreement, so at least for now, Couric will be both the host of a new internet news show and appear on network television. I'm David Weinberg from Marketplace.
As the Obama administration continues its erratic rollout of health care reform, halfway around the world in Indonesia, authorities are getting ready to introduce the world's biggest universal health care program. It'll cover all 240 million citizens. That's an ambitious plan for a middle-income country. And as the BBC's Claire Balderson found on the island of Sulawesi, one of the biggest in the Indonesian archipelago, the country's health care system is already under strain.
Are you a doctor?
Prawat.
Nurse.
You're a nurse.
This is a primary health clinic in rural Sulawesi. It serves 56,000 people with barely any equipment and a doctor who only turns up 3 or 4 days a week. She spends the rest of the time in the city, more than 2 hours' drive away. Indonesia has far fewer hospital beds than countries of similar economic size. If it's already struggling now, will Indonesia be capable of delivering a public health system for everyone?
I'm not sure if the government has actually thought through the entire process.
Political science professor Michael Buller is a long-time observer of Indonesian politics who I met in Makassar.
They basically now have an increase in demand compared to a couple of years ago. I think it's almost a 50% increase, and the hospitals just don't seem to be ready.
Experience in Jakarta suggests Professor Bueller's right to be concerned. A year ago, the governor of the capital city introduced free healthcare for everyone. But hospitals were overwhelmed. Patients queued in accident and emergency wards for up to 5 days. Private hospitals had to take more patients, but when they didn't get properly reimbursed by the authorities, some refused to take any more. Is that what's going to happen across the country then, from the start of next year? Health Minister Nafsia Amboy told me lessons had been learned.
Jakarta went too fast. The preparations were not yet in place.
The idea is that primary health clinics will act as gatekeepers, referring only the most serious cases to hospitals. But will Indonesians, aware of the dire quality at the clinics, go along with this plan?
So we prepare the system, but also communication, information, education, which is now going on using all kinds of media because it's something new.
The BBC's Claire Balderson filed that report from Indonesia, which is also the site of a major trade summit next week. But this morning, the head of the World Trade Organization announced there will be no global trade deal at the summit in Bali, as had been anticipated. Negotiators have been working for 12 long years on the so-called Doha round of trade talks. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.